Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, William Liu, speaking to you after the Toronto Raptors lose to the Phoenix Suns by a score of 99-95. An incredibly entertaining game, really hard fought, tons of lead changes, and the Raptors were right there, punch for punch, against arguably the best team in the league. Phoenix, obviously, you know, they missed a few guys here or there off the bench, but really they had what you would consider their full roster coming in here, and the Raptors just pushed them right down to the wire. Of course, you don't get any sort of moral victories here, but the Raptors really were ahead in the fourth quarter. Obviously, the Raptors couldn't really close the deal. They weren't really up by that much, but a very promising performance. And honestly, when you compare it to the Raptors' six-game winning streak, which was just snapped, the Raptors might have played better in this loss than they did in any of the six games that they won, considering the opposition, considering the fact that the Raptors were also severely shorthanded, missing two key starters in Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent Jr., who were both here with the team, but they were both ruled out before the game due to minor injuries. Doesn't sound like any of them will be out that long. But I think really where the Raptors couldn't get the deal done was on the three-point line. The Suns did a really good job of stacking the paint, keeping guys out on the perimeter, and the Raptors supporting guys, but also even some of their main guys just couldn't knock down enough threes to make the Suns, pay for their defensive strategy. The Raptors shooting 8 of 37 from 3, which is 21%. You're just not going to win any games in the NBA shooting like that. I think the Raptors obviously missing 10 of their 25 free throws also really kills you when you look back on the fact that this was a one-possession game. It was a one-point game pretty much at the very end until the Raptors started to intentionally foul and all this other stuff. But, those are the margins, though. And the Raptors need to sort of figure some of these things out. Realistically, the Raptors played very well, played up to their capabilities. And there's nothing really to be ashamed of. Of course, there's some frustration in the fact that the Raptors played so well and didn't come away with the win. But when you compare this type of effort from the Raptors to some of the games that they've lost earlier this year, you know, whether that's OKC, whether that's Detroit, whether that's Portland, all these other, you know, below average teams that the Raptors have lost to, if they gave anything close to this kind of effort in those games, those are the games that you're more frustrated by. This one, you understand. Phoenix is a very, very smart team. They came in with a very good game plan. They did a really good job of guarding Fred in particular, right? Before the game, Monty Williams, the Suns coach, said there might not be a player in the league playing as well as Fred right now. So it clearly sounds like Fred's got his all-star vote. But this is also what happens when teams specifically scheme against you, is that Fred shooting 7 of 18 in 44 minutes, still had 21 points. So, like, the efficiency is not that bad. But when you look at the overall, clearly not as effective as he was in previous games where you're scoring 30-plus. I think there are things you can learn more in games like this than you would in other games. And I think that there's lots of positives to take away, but there's also some negatives. But let's just start with a bit of a recap of the game. So the Raptors go, obviously the biggest question is you're missing two starters. So who are you going to start? Nick just makes a surprise decision to start Yuta Watanabe, coming off of missing time due to COVID protocols. And then he starts Kem Birch. Kem Birch starting makes sense because Kem is usually the first sub off the bench who comes in for Scotty anyway. So it makes sense to start him, especially on the other side with DeAndre Ayton, a big body that you need your biggest defender to be on the floor for. And then Yuta was a little surprising to me. I thought he might go with Svi. To be honest, neither option is good at all because the Raptors just really lack for shooting guards. And when you take Gary and his reliable 35 minutes per game, plus is like 16 or so points with the defense and the threes and everything like that, you take him out of the lineup, there is no replacement for that. So you put in Yuta. Now, I have to say Yuta was exceptionally rusty. 0 points in 15 minutes, 0 for 4 from the field. He missed a dunk. He missed two open threes during a stretch where the Raptors had actually built a double-digit lead against the Suns bench. But the Raptors, started choking themselves in terms of the open shots not dropping for them. And, I think that's where you look back and you sort of feel Knicks pain because there are no great options. And, you know, when you're looking at what the Raptors may do at the trade deadline, well, if they do want to make a push and the Raptors are playing well enough right now, that has to be a conversation for the front office. Can we help support this roster? That is where the Raptors need to upgrade, because when you're looking at Svi and Yuta giving you 22 minutes essentially at the shooting guard position, the two of them, 0 points in 22 minutes from the shooting guard position. And, you know, I don't want to say that that was the reason the Raptors lost. Obviously, those aren't the main players of the Raptors, but you miss some key production from those guys. You know, Nick decides to go bigger, as he has, you know, pretty much over this entire win streak. The Raptors are winning a lot of games based on their size. And that strategy works to some extent, but it also doesn't, because what you're seeing is, for example, I mean, the Raptors got tremendous production off the bench from their bigs, whether that's Chris Boucher on his birthday, 16 rebounds, including 9 offensive, 2 from Precious Achiuwa offensive rebounds, and then 5 offensive rebounds in a 10-minute shift from Justin Champagne. 5 rebounds in 10 minutes, all on the offensive glass. You're getting 16 extra possessions from just your 3 backup centers. On top of the fact that you got 4 from Ken Burch, the Raptors got 22 offensive rebounds, which is great. There was one possession in the fourth quarter where I think OG missed a 3. Precious Achiuwa chased it down. Then I think someone else missed a jumper, probably Fred. Champagne chased it down. Then the Raptors got it out to OG. He missed another jumper. Chris Boucher chases it down. 3 offensive rebounds on one play. Now, the flip side of that is, so the Raptors, after that, they call timeout to set up a play because, you know, you don't want to miss again. But they do miss again because they get the ball to Precious. He drives. He's unable to sort of finish. He gets himself stuck under the basket. He kicks it out to the perimeter to Chris Boucher, late shot clock. Not a guy you want to have the ball late shot clock unless it's a clean catch and shoot. Chris Paul's around him. Chris fumbles the ball, and Chris Paul goes the other way. Gets it to Mikal Bridges streaking in transition. Precious undercuts him, 3-point play. So they turn 3 offensive rebounds and 4 shot attempts, or at least 4 shot opportunities, into 3 points for the Suns in transition. So there obviously is a huge trade-off in terms of you're just not going to be able to execute. The paint is going to be super cluttered. You know, all of that. But having said that, though, you know, I think on the whole, the Raptors' secondary guys really did give the Raptors a big advantage here. When you consider how many or more possessions the Raptors had, again, 22 offensive rebounds to 10 for Phoenix. In terms of other key points in the game, I thought, well, first off, the Suns did a really good job of guarding Fred. And what they do to Fred is actually very similar to what the Raptors do to many other opposing star perimeter players, which is, so they'll put length on him first off, right? So they weren't using Chris Paul to guard Fred. They were using Mikal Bridges to guard Fred. Mikal Bridges is, you know, 6'8", 7-foot wingspan, super, super skinny, able to evade screens, a lot of pressure on the ball. So first off, the Raptors had to spend a lot of time setting screens, trying to, you know, either on ball, off ball, get the Suns to switch, and then they can get the proper matchups with Fred on Chris Paul. What that does, first off, is A, you're wasting a lot of time in your possession to sort of dedicate yourself towards getting a good matchup. And then B, there's also a lot of chance to commit fouls or turnovers or whatever, right? And the Suns did do a pretty good job of pressuring the Raptors. The other thing is, after the Raptors were able to get Fred in a good matchup, or even if they just used a good screen and Fred got a little bit of space, what would happen is he wouldn't be able to shoot still off the pick and roll because a third defender would just come streaking over and intercept him. And that's exactly what the Raptors actually do to other teams. When you're seeing, especially against, like, let's say the Raptors play the Celtics, for example, Jason Tatum will come off a screen, the Raptors try to put length on him, and then if he gets off that screen and there's a bit of a gap, someone else will run over, and they're going to bet that they can rotate. Now, the thing is, you can do that strategy when you're going up against a team that doesn't have a lot of shooting. And the Suns were quite confident in whether it was Jay Crowder running over or Booker running over or whoever running over, the third defender on the play. They can trust that even if the Raptors beat them with the rotation of the ball and making the bright passes, the Suns can live with these other guys shooting. And by other guys, I mean pretty much anybody, because they were just not willing to let Fred shoot. And Fred still got 18 shot attempts, but he was 7 of 18, which is clearly lower than his percentage of late. Now, what happened was Pascal is missing open threes. UT was missing open threes. OG 4 of 13 from 3, not enough. The Raptors didn't get a single three-point make off the bench, period. Of course, you know, when you're saying that Chris Boucher shot three threes and Precious Achiuwa shot two threes and Champagne took one, chances are very good that they go 0-for-6. So the Suns were very smart in doing this, but that's the kind of respect that Fred is starting to see now. You're starting to see them put some zone on the Raptors, although I thought the Suns quickly scrapped that zone idea and kind of went back to their base defense of sending a third guy towards Fred. So that's why Fred had a really hard time scoring today. You know, the Suns spent so much extra attention on him. Now, where Fred did get some opportunities was usually when the Suns started to break down defensively, which is usually he gets a hard screen. He gets, first off, he gets the right switches and matchups so that he's attacking Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton in particular in the pick and roll, because the Raptors did not want to involve the other three wings in the Phoenix's starting lineup. When they were able to successfully get Chris Paul and Ayton as the matchup, and they were able to set a good screen, they were able to space the floor or empty one side of the floor, and Fred was able to pull up, Fred was still as deadly as you could expect. Two or three times, Ayton was just like a half step too late coming out to the perimeter, and Fred nailed the three. Oh, and Fred also drilled he made a ridiculous driving layup through contact, no call, flipped it over his shoulder, and it banked it off the glass. That was just an outrageous play by Fred. But clearly not a game where Fred was as open or had as many opportunities, which, by the way, is exactly what you would expect against a really, really good defense like the Suns. Clearly an experienced group. They just went to the finals, lost in 6 games. They know how to guard. They got really good perimeter defense. Their perimeter defenders were very suffocating. And, you know, even against that, Fred still had 21 points on 7 of 18 shooting, which is like a reasonably efficient game considering how much attention was on him. So it wasn't a game necessarily for Fred to dominate. Well, then luckily the Raptors have two other guys who can sort of step into that role. And we saw various points of it with Pascal taking over as sort of the go-to guy, and also OG taking over as the go-to guy. Now, I would say between the two of them, Pascal did a better job of it. OG scored more. He had 25, but obviously that's because of the fact that he can catch and shoot for three. And he did 4-13 is not great, but he did hit some threes at the end. So I'm not going to really say it was a bad night for OG necessarily, but I thought Pascal did a really good job of handling the ball. Not only was it to get Fred playing off the ball, but it was mostly just to be able to have somebody who could overwhelm the Suns' length. And as much as the Suns were able to send double teams towards Fred, they weren't double teaming Pascal as much. They were more willing to live one-on-one with Pascal Siakam going up against their tough perimeter defenders. And I thought Pascal did a pretty good job. He was guarded most of the time by Jay Crowder, who is definitely a Gerald Henderson Award winner here. He nailed a number of tough shots, and I'll talk about that later. But Pascal, in the primary role, did a great job of driving downhill, creating 7 assists to lead the team. Only 15 assists on the night for the Raptors. Obviously, a lot of that was the fact that they bricked every open three possible. But Pascal was able to drive downhill, start to create, and he did a really good job of sort of just, if it wasn't Fred scoring, Pascal was the one creating. And that's exactly what we've seen here in the 6-game win streak that was just lost here, is the fact that the Raptors have these two guys to turn to. If they want to load up on one guy, you have the other guy, right? And Pascal was absolutely the guy today. Now, I thought one of the big turning points of the game was the fact that in the fourth quarter, the Raptors were up maybe like one or two possessions, nothing big, but, you know, they were managing the game. And Pascal was the primary guy there. The Raptors were able to force the Suns into a bit of a scramble. They rotate the ball out to the corner to Landry Shamet. And Pascal rotates over and blocks the three. Now, the thing is, Shamet sticks his leg out and he draws some contact, and the referees call the foul on Pascal. That was about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That's Pascal's fifth foul. You have to send him to the bench at that point because you don't want him to foul out. Well, I guess you don't have to, but most coaches opt for the safer choice, which was, you know, not a bad choice by Nick, but a bad call by the officials. And the reason for this is, first off, that is a 3-point block for Pascal. Instead, they give 3 free throws to Shamet, who nails all three. So they completely bail out the Suns on that possession. The other thing is, Pascal now has his fifth foul. He has to sit on the bench. And the Raptors would have challenged this play, except for the fact that they had to use their challenge in the third quarter, where Booker, on a similar sequence, he kicks out his leg on a jumper. The referees fall for that after OG sort of contests the shot. Nick has to use his challenge in the third quarter. They go back, they review it. It's all right. They flip the call, you know, whatever. But because they fell for the same trick twice, the Raptors get burnt. And when you took Pascal out of the game in the fourth quarter, at that point, the Raptors kind of lost a lot of momentum offensively. Now, I would say that the Suns did a really good job of capitalizing on this, and they were doing a really good job of running out in transition, all this other stuff. But really, when you took Pascal out of the game, nobody was really there to carry the offense. And that's when you saw these lineups with Precious, Boucher, and Champagne. And again, those guys getting you 16 offensive rebounds is ridiculous. And I would say they did their job, but there's just not enough shooting or playmaking or scoring within the three of those guys. That if basically was just OG and Fred chucking up perimeter jumpers that were pretty heavily contested. So it's not necessarily that much of a surprise that the Raptors offense stalled and that the Suns were able to go up and take the lead. Now, the thing that was a little bit disappointing was, okay, so the Raptors also play quite a bit with OG as the featured guy. Not only did he take 13 threes, but he also took 20 shots, which is probably the first time OG's taken 20 shots since like the start of the season. On the whole, OG's scoring was fine, but the part to me that was disappointing was sort of when you watched the performance. For example, in the third quarter, the Raptors were really trying to get OG to attack Devin Booker. Now, Booker was playing really physical defense, you know, using both arms, shoving OG, you know, whatever. Physical style defense. In a playoff setting, nobody will complain about any of this sort of contact. Even in a regular season context, I really enjoy these types of defensive matchups, so I'm cool with it. But the point is, Booker was putting a lot of physical pressure on OG, and it felt like OG just couldn't handle it. Like, there were, for example, two sequences in the third quarter where OG just failed to seal himself on the post, and Booker's able to jump ahead. One time the Suns got the turnover, the other time they were able to tip it out and make this Raptors reset. That's something the OG's got to do a better job of. If you're stronger than Booker, which he absolutely is, seal your man before putting your hands up. Okay, that's a bit of inexperience from OG, quite honestly. As a featured guy, you got to make sure you can catch the ball. Some of the really small fundamentals and basics really matter here. And then when he was going up against Booker a few times, you know, there's one play where Booker completely had him trapped in the right corner here in the third quarter, and OG just had to throw back out, and it was a turnover, and the Suns scored, whatever. Not good, okay? He needed to be better in terms of handling the pressure. We all know OG's handle is probably the weakest part of his offensive game. Now, the thing is, it's not like OG wasn't able to score on Booker a few times. He was. Like, there was a sequence where, later in the quarter, OG catches the ball and then immediately makes a move to the basket, beats Booker to the spot. He's stronger than Booker. Booker gets his fifth foul. He has to go to the bench. But generally speaking, it just didn't feel like OG could create very much on his own. And we know that that's something that's an issue for him. You know, he nailed a pull-up three against, I think, probably Jalen Smith, the big off the bench for the Suns. But other than that, like, it just didn't feel like OG had that extra layer of perimeter creation that the Raptors needed from him. And then, again, absent that, those are the only three guys who were scoring. It was either Fred, who was having, you know, triple teams on him, OG, who struggled with the specific ball pressure that the Suns were giving him, and then Pascal gets taken out with the fifth foul. So it's not a surprise that the Raptors ran out of offense eventually. But to be honest, on the whole, even having said all that, these three guys still give you a reasonably efficient night. And this is where you really do miss Gary Trent Jr. You miss Scottie Barnes, because those are the other guys who can come in and give you something. When you look at the 15 minutes Utah played, and everyone knows that this is a very Utah-friendly program, but whether it was rust or whatever, or just he wasn't good enough, 0 points in 15 minutes, -9, in a game the Raptors lose by one possession. You replace that with Gary Trent Jr., the Raptors win this game. And you look at the way the Suns guarded, they wouldn't have used that specific strategy of overloading Fred and sending a third guy at him if someone else was actually a threat to shoot. And we know Gary obviously is a threat to shoot, right? So that's an issue when you look at the fact that even Scottie Barnes, with the way he's able to screen and make plays, and, you know, he can give you a three here and there, but he also is able to just hit some jumpers in the mid-range area. He's able to drive to the basket. He's bigger than most of the Suns' perimeter defenders. And we saw that the Raptors' size advantage, whether it was Pascal or even at times OG, like, they're able to execute and create advantages there. And that wasn't really there for them either. So that's where you really miss some of your guys. But, of course, are the Raptors really in a position to be saying, wow, the Raptors, we lost this game because we didn't have some of our guys? well, this is the NBA right now. Every team right now has some layer of injuries or whatever. This is, you know, January in the NBA, the middle of the season, COVID, all this other stuff. No team is going to have their full assortment of guys, right? So if the Raptors lose this game because they're missing a couple of pieces, well, I mean, just look back to the six games that they won. However, I think overall, though, the offensive perspective, yes, the Raptors weren't really able to fully capitalize. 95 points is not great. But having said that, though, this was also a game where the Raptors just could nail the three. It wasn't like the Suns were getting onto all these threes. Pascal was open for almost all five of his shots from deep, which he were 0-for-5. Utah was 0-for-2 from three. You know, there was a stretch there where Ken Birch got a wide open corner three. I was watching him before the game warm up. This guy could knock down a corner three, no problem in a warm up setting. But even though that was essentially a warm up shot, him coming off the bench, him getting wide open, 5 seconds left on an inbound play, he creeps to the corner. He's completely wide open. And I mean, like, wide open in the sense that the Suns don't even contest, they just give up on the shot. Kevin's wide open for three. He misses the shot. Precious Achiuwa in the fourth quarter, he's wide open for three. The Suns ignore him completely. Foot set, everything, has all the time in the world. Nobody contesting. He misses the shot, right? And so, you know, and then Boucher 0-for-3 as well. So I would say the Raptors could have, even just with a little bit more of a regular shot performance. So now I'm not expecting these guys to hit 40% or even 50% or anything wild, but literally one more three from the Raptors, the Raptors could have swung this game. But that's kind of the effort that they gave. And I think, you know, really, when you look at the other side of the ball, which I'm going to do on the other side of this break, when you look at the defense that the Raptors played against the Suns, that's what impressed me the most, because it wasn't necessarily like the Raptors were just going to lose the game just because they shot 8 of 37. The Raptors kept themselves ahead for a majority of this game because of the fact that they were able to execute on defense. And that's where, if the Raptors get back to their winning ways, which they have done of late, they have to hang their hats on defense, because this group for the Raptors, they have tremendous potential on defense, and it hasn't been actualized over the first half of the year here. The Raptors have played 38 games and they're about 20th in defense, which is very, very surprising considering their talent level, but they can get to a really high gear defensively, and they did so today. So on the other side of this break, I'm going to explain what happened with the Raptors defense. But for now, you've been listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Lu. Continue to recap the Raptors' 99-95 loss to the Phoenix Suns. So during the break, I was made aware that Devin Booker was irate at the fact that the Raptor, the mascot, who is the only fan in the building, well, I mean, aside from me, really, but, you know, I excuse myself to this 600 level after the first half, because, you know, I'm a professional. The only fan in the building, the mascot, during a free throw, was pulling some hijinks. And by that, I mean nothing like outrageous, right? He, like, kicked his leg up as a distraction tactic, because, again, there's literally one fan in the arena, and Booker got mad at the mascot and told the refs, and the refs sent the mascot essentially to the penalty box, but made him wait at the corner of the floor. I'm sorry, but that's so petty. The refs should have just told Booker to shoot your free throw. The Raptor did nothing wrong in that situation. It's completely within his right. I mean, that's literally his job. The job of the mascot is to come in here and provide some entertainment. If you go watch any team in the NBA, the mascot is doing something during free throws. And of course, most teams in the NBA, I mean, literally every team in the NBA has fans in the arena, probably full capacity fans in the arena. And fans are kind of chanting and doing whatever. To single out the Raptor, literally the one player. Okay, so you just want a completely empty gym. That's outrageous, man. I couldn't believe that from Devin Booker. I'm sorry, but that's some petty stuff right there. Going back to this game, so the Raptors did a really good job defensively, and that's something I wanted to highlight, because that was what kept the Raptors in the lead and also in the game until the very end here. And, yeah, I mean, first off, Phoenix is a very good offensive club. They had most of their top guns, and the Raptors were just able to neutralize them for most of the game. A couple of things. Number one, the strategy against Booker. Booker missed a couple of makeable shots. I could see the frustration over the course of the game. He did miss a couple of – he takes some tough shots, but he also missed some decently open shots that I would say another game he would make. Now, the thing that Booker did was that he didn't force it too much. He only took 13 shots. It wasn't his night. Got himself to the free throw line. Ended up with 16. The other thing is OG does a really good job with Booker. Booker has a strength element to his game where he's able to sort of push off and sort of create that separation against smaller players. That's not the case against OG. You cannot push this guy. And then OG also is longer than Booker. And if you remember to last season in Tampa in the bubble, there was a game the Raptors lost to the Suns, also close, you know, whatever. And on that in that game, OG was the one guarding Booker. Booker was seeking out OG in particular to go ISO against him and really couldn't execute and couldn't get the shot off even. So OG has a history here against Booker. But yeah, Booker only 4 of 13 from the field, 2 of 7 from 3. Obviously, he missed a couple of makeable shots. But generally speaking, the Raptors did a really good job guarding him. OG with the play at the end of the game too where Booker was trying to get a pass off because he couldn't actually shake OG, so he had to just give him up. And OG picked him off. OG was able to break away, and Booker ends up undercutting him in transition, and Booker commits his fifth foul, and OG goes to the free throw line and knocks down two. Like that, you know, that was the kind of game that Booker was having, to the point where he had to complain about the mascot. But the Raptors did a really good job against Booker. And the other part that the Suns really, really hurt you with is Chris Paul. Now, I thought Chris played a really good game overall, right? 33 minutes, he had 15 points, 12 assists, 5 steals, plus 15. I mean, kind of an outrageous performance when you think about it. However, over the course of the game, the Raptors did a really good job against Chris. Now, one thing that they were doing was, so even though Chris Paul was a threat to pull up from three, what they were doing is that they were chasing Chris around the screen. And so Fred was pressuring Chris. And then the Raptors wouldn't actually keep their bigs up at the three-point line, because I think they were really afraid of the role to Ayton. Right, and obviously Chris, being a really good playmaker, will definitely be able to find Ayton rolling to the basket. So instead, they kept their bigs dropped back, which is usually a bad strategy against Chris Paul. But the Raptors, what they did was, even though they were in a deep drop, as soon as Chris rounded the corner, because it didn't really feel like Chris wanted to shoot the pull-up three in particular. Also, I think Fred did a really good job of just like putting a lot of effort and getting around these screens and at least trying to put pressure on Chris to, like, you know, contest from behind or whatever. So Chris didn't really want to take the pull-up three. He was only taking three threes today. But instead, what the Raptors would do is, once Chris Paul rounded inside the three-point arc, and usually will then snake the pick and roll, sort of curl in front of the path that he was already taking towards the basket, that's when the Raptors' bigs will then jump out and meet Chris right at the elbow area. Because the thing is with Chris, he's shooting like 215% on mid-range jumpers. Now, the one time they couldn't really execute this was at the very end of the game, where the Raptors were down one. Chris Paul had the ball, 30 seconds left, comes off a screen, and he gets to a spot. And Kem was just a fraction late. He had a contest up. Chris Paul was fading. But Chris, you know, if he gets that look off, he's probably going to make it. And he made that. That was a three-point game. The Raptors then had a hard time catching up because the Suns did a good job of intentionally fouling to deny the three-point attempt. But, yeah, between that, the Raptors did a really good job. And where the Suns were able to hurt them was through Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder made so many difficult jumpers over the course of the game that were kind of backbreakers against the run of play, as they say in soccer, where the Raptors had some momentum, and then Jay Crowder will do some stuff. Like, for example, in the second quarter, the Raptors were able to build the lead. The Suns bench was not good. The Raptors bench was outplaying them, and they were able to go up double digits. But then all of a sudden, Jay Crowder makes a contested three. He makes a jumper from the free throw line area where it hits back rim, but it bounces up, and then it drops right through the rim. Another play was able to hit a contested three, and all of a sudden the Suns are back in the game. Then Crowder hits a three at the end of the quarter too to put the Raptors only up two at halftime, even though the Raptors played really well. Yeah, Crowder was the one hurting them. And maybe you would say, well, between Crowder and Bridges, Bridges had a below average night, 41 minutes for him, 1 of 6 from three, wasn't very effective overall offensively. Maybe they kind of evened it out, but realistically, that's where they got their offense. Because, you know, Ayton is the guy that is the other sort of premier scorer that the Suns have. Obviously, he's the third option, but when you're talking about a seven-footer with really great hands, good touch around the basket, able to finish above the rim, able to hit free throws, you know, he gave them 16 points on a very efficient 5 of 7 shooting with 6 of 6 from the free throw line, and he gave the Suns a couple of plays where, you know, he was able to catch it deeper in the post, go up for the floaters and hook shots. But the Raptors did a really good job of also keeping extra bodies, extra bigs on the floor, so they were able to rotate out to Ayton, send a double team at Ayton, force him to give up the ball. you can live with the fact that Aiden only took 7 field goal attempts in 30 minutes. 16 points is obviously hyper-efficient in terms of those field goal attempts, but the Raptors actually had Aiden under reasonable control. And then nobody off the Suns bench was really able to do much. I mean, like, you have Jalen Smith, who knocked down a few jumpers, whatever. Okay, I guess that's part of his skill set, but they got him to turn the ball over a bunch. JaVale McGee is not really much of a factor. Bismack Biyombo, I mean, I love Bismack. It was great seeing Bismack. He seems like he still had a lot of friends here in Toronto based on that legendary year he spent here where the Raptors went to the Eastern Conference Finals with Biyombo as one of their main guys, which is pretty amazing to think about. But we know Bismack can't do anything with the ball, right? So he was not doing anything with it. Shamit, I mean, he got a three, and then his biggest contribution was getting that fifth foul on Pascal, sticking his leg out, and the refs falling for that for the second time in a row. But Campaign really didn't do much off the bench either. You know, this guy, it's so weird watching Campaign. It feels like he exclusively plays diagonally. And I think part of it is the fact that he's so shifty. Part of that is the fact that he's a lefty. But he always just kind of drives against the grain. You think he's going right, then he goes back to his left, and then he throws a shot up with his right going against his body, banking it off the glass, kind of that kind of stuff. Like, he's really shifty, but even he wasn't much of a factor, only 4 points in 15 minutes. So the Raptors defensively did a really good job. And really the things that really came undone for them was two things. One, after doing a really good job of winning the rebounding battle all game, the Raptors allowed 2 offensive rebounds on the same possession to the Suns. After the Raptors took a 1-point lead. And on the third field goal attempt after the second offensive rebound, where one, it was Booker chased it down, then Ayton chased it down, then the Suns were able to run a play for Booker coming off a screen, and Ayton did a really good job of making contact with OG to create that little bit of separation. And Booker, quite frankly, is very good at hitting these sort of in-between shots. And the Raptors were just a split second late to contest. He made that shot, and then CP3 made his little jumper as well. And that's where you might say, well, if the Raptors had guys like that to close, that might be the difference. And I honestly will entertain that conversation. I think that's totally valid to have. You know, when you look at the kind of closers, quote-unquote, that the Raptors have, they don't have the same skill level as Devin Booker or Chris Paul. There's no doubt about that, right? But at the same time, like, where the Raptors lost that game was the fact that they couldn't secure those 2 defensive rebounds at the very key moment. They couldn't fully execute their scheme to contest against Chris Paul there when they did a really good job of, you know, contesting against the mid-range jumper over the course of the game. And then, to be honest, you go back to the fact that, yeah, the bigger picture is that they were 8 of 37 from 3. And they also missed 10 free throws. And they essentially lost a 1-possession game where it was a 1-point game at the very end. So, it's difficult. And then, of course, the other thing is there was a controversial play where, so the Raptors, you know, were down 3 and they gave the ball to OG Anunoby and they were kind of scrambling around, and eventually OG is able to find a gap in the lane, drive it all the way to the basket and finish at the rim. Now, maybe this was just me watching from the 600 level and maybe on the TV, I'm not really sure, but it looked very clear to me that Aiden made contact with OG's arm, and OG's just really strong, and OG finished through it. And I'm not saying like it was like a hack job, but it was clear there was contact on the drive. He was moving, and the refs just didn't call that. And the thing here is the Raptors were down 3, and that should have been an and-one opportunity. Instead, it was just 2, and the Raptors had to continue following. I need to go look back on the replay for this one, but that was a questionable sequence for me that could have been very pivotal. To be fair, I don't even care about the last 2-second, 2-minute report. Who cares about that? Like, they'll just they'll always be like, well, you know, this, yeah, it's the correct call. Like, forget it. If you're just going to say it's a correct call every single time, why even publish these reports? But anyway, it looked like OG was fouled. No chance to tie there. And then the Raptors just weren't able to fully execute in terms of getting the ball to their 3-point shooters. They were on an inbound play where the Raptors had about 5 seconds down 3. The Suns did a really good job of sort of pressuring up and taking away the Raptors' main shooters. And then the Raptors had to inbound to Kemp Birch, who was getting handed right back to Fred for a play to shoot the 3. But the Suns were very smart in tying up Kemp Birch upon the catch. And that forced them to only shoot 2 free throws instead of getting a chance to tie. And the Suns did that twice to sort of prevent the Raptors from having any opportunity to get the three at the end. But knowing the Raptors' luck in terms of the way they shot the three, they probably would have missed it. So honestly, a fantastic game. Like, I really don't have many complaints. I think the way the Raptors guarded was really promising. And as the Raptors go on this road trip where they're out for the next 2 weeks away from Scotiabank, that's what I want to see them take. That approach defensively, because this team can really guard. And you saw OG lock in on a perimeter player that is, you know, an all-star in Devin Booker. You saw Fred pressure Chris Paul the full length of the floor. That was beautiful, you know. And then you saw even the Raptors bigs off the bench. I think this other teams are having a really hard time figuring out where to attack when the Raptors have that much length on the floor. And the Suns had a really hard time with that too, because with Boucher and Precious in the middle, there is just very, very few opportunities for the Suns to sort of get back. And honestly, when Boucher plays as inspired as he did today, I mean, he almost single-handedly won the Raptors the game, because I can't believe it's been this long into the pod, but Boucher deserves his own little clear out here on the show, because he played sensational. Watching it in person, the number of hustle plays he made, that's what kept the Raptors in the game, despite the fact that they were missing all these shots. And what I mean by that is, well, first off, his best play of the game, the Raptors are scrambling in the last 2 minutes. Chris Paul gets an open look at a three in the corner, and I think the Raptors were up one or whatever, but very, very close, one possession game. You have to get a stop here. The Raptors were put in rotation. They were scrambling. Chris Paul gets an open three. He shoots it, and then out of nowhere, Boucher was able to block the three. It was incredible watching it live. The speed at which he was moving, the ground that he covered was outrageous. I really don't think that there might be like five players in the NBA who could have made that play, and I'm not even trying to gas it. Like, I really mean that that's how athletic that play was, between the length and the quickness that Boucher was moving with. Boucher had three blocks in 37 minutes. That was great. Boucher also, in a stretch in the second quarter where the Raptors were going ahead, took a charge, and the Raptors this season, honestly, they might be in the single digits in number of charges taken, okay? Took a charge, and then won two loose balls, which were called loose ball fouls against the Suns. So that's three fouls that he drew on the offensive end for Phoenix. That was a really, really inspired stretch of play for Chris. The fact that he had nine offensive rebounds is outrageous, but he just kept jumping and crashing the glass. Now, the Suns, just like other teams, they don't necessarily want to play with two bigs, right? They lean more with their offense. Now, at times in this game, they did play with two bigs. They would play Jalen Smith with JaVale McGee or with Bismack Biyombo in the middle. But in the fourth quarter, they were going a little bit smaller. They wanted more shooting on the floor. And so that left guys like Landry Shamet, who's about 6'5", just a standard size shooting guard, trying to box out against Chris Boucher. And Chris was relentless. He chased down every miss, right? When the opposing center is on Precious, that means a wing is on Chris. Chris has the length. He just kept crashing for putbacks. And, of course, you have Champagne as well. It almost became comical. There was one play where Champagne was there to win an offensive rebound. Then he was able to put it back on the rim. He missed it. But luckily, the Raptors had a second guy crashing the glass behind him with Chris being able to put it back in. There was another sequence where OG Anunoby went to the free throw line, missed both free throws. But who was there to secure the loose ball foul but Chris Boucher? He literally was able to give the Raptors a reset there. He goes to the free throw line. He makes both. His hustle today was sensational. His defense today was really good. And it just continues to stretch where he is just really locked in, found his role again, found his purpose, and he is impacting games. He's affecting outcomes. And you just can't say enough about the way he was making the hustle plays. He might have made 10 or 15 hustle plays in a game like this. And he played 37 minutes. And it actually reminded me a lot of one of Chris's first breakout games with the Raptors, which is a while back now. This is pre-pandemic times, you know, when... Actually, this is not even pre-pandemic, because I think the pandemic was happening in other parts of the world at this point. But, you know, there was a game of the Raptors in the 2019-2020 season, the defending champion season, where the Raptors were playing the Phoenix Suns, I think on the road or at home. And Chris had gotten an opportunity there with the Raptors where he had some injuries. Yeah. And this was on the road. The Raptors beat the Suns 123-114 to improve to 43-18, which is pretty wild. Meanwhile, the Suns are 24-38. It's, you know, obviously been a reversal of fortunes for the two franchises since. But Chris in that game, one of his first breakout performances, 19 points and 15 rebounds in 29 minutes off the bench. And I remember Nick closing with him. And yeah, similar performance here, man. Chris, his effort was really strong on his birthday. And, you know, more power to him, honestly. He's really found his role here. And it's just a shame the Raptors couldn't close it out with the win. But none of that was Chris's fault. He played great. And, you know, he's almost single-handedly propping up the bench. And that's where you're looking for is just some guard play to help him. Because if Chris is going to play like this off the bench, all you need to round out the rotation is for Svi and Yuta to play well, which is generally not going to be there. Maybe Yuta gives you great defense, but he's not going to give you great offense. We know that. You need to find somebody to come in and do that job, because that's where the Raptors are losing these games. Chris gives you 13 and 16 off the bench. Precious gives you 6 and 6 off the bench. You know, some decent defense, some hustle plays, whatever. Like, you're not really complaining about that. Justin Champagne kind of did the same thing. There's no scoring off the bench. Svi was the only guy who came off the bench, and it was 7 minutes. You know what Svi did? On an offensive rebound, the ball bounces Svi's way. Svi did a really good job crashing the glass. The ball bounces Svi's way, and instead of collecting the ball and then going up for a putback, maybe in one sort of fell swoop, or maybe he gets the ball, lands, gathers himself, goes up strong, he decides, oh, this ball's breaking this way? I'm going to throw down a Vince Carter-level putback jam. Except he's not Vince. He's not even 44-year-old Vince, or however old Vince is these days. He's Svi. So when he goes for the putback dunk, he just bricks it. And I'm not saying that those 2 points were the difference in this game, but in a game where you lose by one possession, and one of those possessions that you wasted over the course of the game was you trying to throw down a dunk where you're cocking it back under the rim all the way back and trying to throw down one of these dunks. I'm sorry, but that's just another missed opportunity. What are guys coming in to do, right? And he doesn't get a three off in 7 minutes. He doesn't get any sort of chances to shoot other than that putback opportunity. It's bad. And then you combine that with the fact that Yuta was also shooting blanks. Maybe with Yuta, you forgive him a little bit more because this is literally the first game coming back from COVID. But still, you know, Nick clearly felt confident enough to start him at least. And yeah, you know, and what are his other options? Malachi Flynn, who just got benched in the 905 game. Delano Banton, who is not going to give you any shooting, but maybe you play Delano anyway. I don't know. David Johnson, looks like he's finally recovered from injuries, and he was taking parts in warmups, but clearly he's not a part of the team really right now. Goran's literally not with the team. Like, you don't have any other options. So even with Gary just missing 2 games here, you sorely lack the offense that he provides. So it's this is the flaw of the roster. And that's where they need to continue to build. So, and you know, to the bigger conversation of, do you make a trade to upgrade this team in the short term? I would say no, but I would say you absolutely, whether it's this trade deadline, whether it's the offseason coming up, whether it's the draft coming up, whether it's the following offseason, whatever, you need to improve your guard play. You have to look for these kind of players who can help you with that, because it's actually comical, the level that the Raptors have coming off the bench. It's so far below average, and they don't need anything significant to be an upgrade. That's how poor the Raptors secondary guards have played this season. So, tough game. In terms of the result, the Raptors really could have gone either way, but the Suns make more plays at the end. And that's what you expect. The Suns obviously are a more experienced group, more battle-tested group, but the Raptors are right there with them. The Raptors are more shorthanded than the Suns. And, you know, they had a great chance here. So, in terms of wrapping up the show, I'm going to hand out the 3 stars. So, the first star for me is going to go to Pascal. 22 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, 39 minutes, 10 of 23. You know, it was weird because I thought at first this might be a shaky game for him, because literally the first play of the game, Fred hits it ahead to Pascal. Pascal fumbles the ball out of bounds under very little pressure. I was like, okay, you know, I hope it's not one of those games. But it wasn't. Pascal was very sharp. He was able to get downhill. He was able to break down the Suns' defense. You know, him... Man, the Suns have some pretty decent shot blocking with Ayton. You know, they have obviously 2 shot blockers coming off the bench, and McGee and Biombo. Even Jalen Smith did a really good job of just using his length. But Pascal was just roasting these guys. And driving downhill and creating. He is just playing at such a high level right now. His handle looks very sharp. He's even making pocket passes on the to find pressures on the roll. And the reads there are just so sharp for Pascal right now, getting out in transition, finishing plays. He's been great. And again, not to put this all on the refs, but not only did they miss the N1 opportunity for OG to tie at the last minute of the game, but they also called the fifth foul on Pascal. And I think that was really one of the big turning points of this game, was Pascal getting forced to the bench and then the Suns getting three free throws to take a chunk out of the Raptors' lead. So, but Pascal was great, and he was the Raptors' best player tonight. And unfortunately, he fouled out. But, you know, 39 minutes, he did all that he could in that time. Second star, I'm going to give that to Chris. 13 points, 16 rebounds off the bench, including 9 offensive, 3 blocks as well, 4 of 9 from the field. So many plays where he's just following up misses, chasing down misses. That's how he got himself to the free throw line. I do wish he was shot better than 5 of 8. I do wish that he hit, you know, a single 3. He was 0 for 3 from 3 tonight. You know, the Raptors do need more spacing. But the fundamental thing the Raptors need from Chris is the energy that he's giving you overall, because he can change games. Not even with the scoring. Today he did some of the scoring, but not even just with the scoring, not even with the three-point shot, but just the way he's able to make hustle plays. Because there are things that Chris can do that nobody else on the Raptors can do. That block in the corner against Chris Paul, where Chris Boucher, as Chris Paul started to go into a shot, Chris Boucher might have been at the top of the arc, and he still somehow was able to run over and block it. That is a special play that only Chris can make. The fact that he can get 9 offensive rebounds, this is not even something new. He's done some things like this before. He has the ability to change games, and he's found his role. He's playing really well within it. Happy birthday to Chris. And unfortunately, they couldn't get the win for him, but he played quite well, and he single-handedly propped up the bench, and he got a chance to close the game as well, obviously with Utah struggling and with no Gary and no Scotty to contribute here. And then, in terms of your third star, I'm going to give that to Fred. 21 points in 44 minutes. The shooting percentage not as good as it has been in recent games. 7 of 18. Hit 4 of 10 from 3. But I just thought his energy he played with, the hustle, you know, the fact that he pressured Chris Paul up and down the floor, the way that he was guarding even on Devin Booker on switches and stuff like that, he did a really good job. And the way the Suns were sending 3 guys at him, that is a true sign of respect. And that's what you're starting to see here is that, okay, so Fred's doing all this. He's the player of the week, everything like that. He's got the league on notice. Like, he's the number one item on the opposing scouting reports. So he's going to see these box on ones, as he talked about. He's going to get blitzed. He's going to have a second guy coming flying towards him. And he's got to read all that, and he's got to sort of adapt to all that. And it's just a shame that he couldn't come through eventually with the win. But even despite all that pressure, him getting 21 points while facing that much defensive attention is a good sign of progress for me. In terms of your Gerald Henderson Award winner, I've already said it, but Jay Crowder led the Suns in scoring with 19 points. That's unbelievable. That's a team with Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Ayton, and he led them all in scoring with 19 points. Yeah, some of those were open, but the Raptors leave him open by design. He's the guy who is the one that you want taking the shots, but he's also one of those guys like Dylan Brooks in a way where he's just willing. He has his, you know, he's willing to take the shots. He loves those big moments, and when he makes them, it kind of breaks your back. And I think he single-handedly got the Suns back into it in the second quarter when they had lost a lot of their momentum. And then Jay Crowder made a number of big plays in the second half as well. So good effort from the Raptors overall. Like, you can't really fault them. I think, obviously, you want to see Gary healthy. You want to see Scotty healthy. And you just want to see what this team can do, because today they showed that they can really guard even though the best teams in the league. They can hang with them. And, you know, just with a couple more chances here or there, they could have taken the game. So nothing to be ashamed of. Keep your heads up high. The Raptors then are able to go out on the road. And that's where I'll be back to continue the Raptors reaction coverage. So before I go, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the Raptors show wherever you find podcasts. Keep us high in the charts. Rate, review, subscribe. You listen to the Raptors show every Monday to Friday between 2 and 3 p.m. Eastern. And that's that. So thanks everyone for listening. And I'll be back after the next game. Peace.